And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. I think I'm getting off to a good start this morning because I did not break the microphone off the stand today. That means I'm in good territory. Maybe the rest of it will go well. All right, good to be with you today. This program is all about how you can help yourself with natural remedies. If you want to call it natural health care, if you want to call it holistic, if you want to call it using remedies to enhance the health of your body, I like that. I came across this article from the year 2011, the month of February, and I think it was, here's the title of the article right here. And the reason why I'm covering this is because it's so simple and so easy, and so think of it this way. When you drink a cup of tea, you're telling yourself that you love yourself and you want to help yourself. It improves how the immune system works. But here's the title of it. Effects of Green Tea Catechins. Catechins is just a kind of a fancy term for the flavonoid compounds that just naturally are found in that herb, green tea. So the effects of green tea catechins and theanine, which is an amino acid, on preventing influenza infection among healthcare workers, a randomized controlled trial. Okay, so sometimes when people get a flu vaccine, the effectiveness of the vaccine at preventing the flu might be 8%, 9%, sometimes 33%. So maybe it has a little bit of a benefit. So what I'm going to ask you today is, what can we learn about this study about drinking green tea every day? Does it have any value to you? Does it help? Do you take away from this conversation something that you could actually put into practice and use? Okay, here's the study right here. Japanese pharmacologists at the University of Shizuoka, they divided 197 men and women who worked in healthcare into two groups. So this was during the year 2009 to 2010, during the flu season. For all I know, maybe that was October to February. Okay. Subjects in one group, they took a placebo every day for 5 months. That's the other thing I like about this study. They didn't just do it in 1 month or over the course of a month. They kind of tried to cover all the entire flu season. That makes sense? So they gave it 5 months just to see what would happen. So the other group, besides the placebo group, they took 210 milligrams of a unique amino acid called L-theanine. Maybe you've been walking down the aisle of the health food store and you've just kind of noticed that amino acid there and you're kind of curious, well, what does that do and how does the human body use that? Well, this may be one application. I know it has a lot. So they gave them 210 milligrams of the amino acid L-theanine and then 378 milligrams of catechins from green tea every day. They say that 270 milligrams were in the form of EGCG, which is epigallocatechin gallate or something, if I remember correctly. It says also, if you want that amount they used in the study, all you got to do is just drink two cups of green tea every day, and bang, you're there. You're right on the money. And actually, that sounds easy to me. Does that sound like anything that's too difficult to take two cups and put one bag of green tea in another tea bag in the other one and pour some hot water over it? Or, I don't care if you use warm water. And then you're there. So that's kind of where I got those numbers. There was an article, the Journal of the American College of Nutrition 2010, that kind of gave me that idea. So I didn't read the whole article, by the way. Okay, it is going to be difficult to get 210 milligrams of L-theanine every day by drinking green tea. And so tea, technically, is really the only source that I know of significant amounts of dietary theanine. So when you drink green tea or tea of any kind, you're actually getting L-theanine, okay? A cup of green tea contains approximately 5 milligrams of this amino acid, L-theanine. A cup of black tea can contain up to 20 milligrams. And it comes from the same plant. But the black tea itself, that's the one that has been fermented. Okay, the very best source of L-theanine comes from a type of tea called matcha. Some people like matcha. It's not my favorite. I would drink it if it was served to me, gladly, but it's not the one that I usually run to when I'm thinking about drinking tea. I've already told everybody I'm so partial to hibiscus tea that comes from the hibiscus flower. I think it's just spectacular. But green tea has got so much research behind it. Anyway, here's the results of the study. So all they're doing is taking a little bit of L-theanine, an amino acid that comes from tea, and they're drinking 2 cups of tea a day. Okay. Compared to the placebo group, users of the theanine catechin combination became ill 4 times less often as a result of infection with influenza. I mean, that's kind of the takeaway that I want you to think about. These people are in the hospital, maybe in a nursing care facility, maybe in a rehab, but they're exposed to sick people all day long, every day. Maybe what they should have done is they should have tested this against school teachers that are exposed to kids with runny noses and are coughing and sneezing and touching everything. That probably would have been a pretty fair test too. So I like this study very much because they're in the middle of battle. It's not like they can avoid it. It's their job. So in the placebo group, 13% of the test subjects got the flu, and in the supplementation, this was only 4%. It's a pretty significant number. Now, let me just state this right here. When they do the math on this, according to the test results and the data, if you supplemented with a little bit of L-theanine during flu season, along with a little bit of green tea, that comes out to about 2 cups a day, it reduced the risk of influenza by a factor of 5. That's 500%. That's 5 times as much. I'm looking at the graph right here. To me, it's amazing. Oh, my goodness. They show that this is just so interesting how they could see that people in the placebo group, the longer they were exposed to flu, the more people that got it. But when you took the catechin and the theanine from tea, not so much. Do you know of any drug that can reduce your risk of getting influenza by 500%? I don't know of any. Even if you focus on the flu vaccine or the flu shot, I mean, that can't do much better than probably 35%. It's amazing. And it's so cheap, too, and it's good for you. Here's the mechanism right here. Experimental studies have shown some mechanisms of the action of green tea catechins and theanine on the prevention of influenza infection, write the Japanese researchers. And I'm just quoting them, and I did not look this up. I wanted to, but I just didn't manage my time well. I'm just going to quote them. These studies have shown that green tea catechins bind to the hemagglutinin molecule of the influenza virus, thereby inhibiting the virus absorption into your cells, blocking viral assembly. Isn't that interesting? To me, that's interesting. Green tea blocks the flu virus from entering your cells. Now, I don't know how you feel about this, but I know for a fact there's some people, they are literally terrified of getting the flu, or getting COVID, or getting a cold period. I mean, it's just literally, it's the scariest thing that they are ever going to face in their life. Now, is that rational? I don't know. I mean, to them it is. So here's one option that you have. Do yourself a favor. Help your immune system. Why don't you drink some green tea every day? And if you were at the health food store, what if you came across the amino acid L-theanine? Well, maybe that's interesting to you. Here's another one that I found right here. Now, this one, I did not look it up, but I'm just quoting a part of it. I mean, I didn't read the whole article. Theanine, which is, you know, comes from green tea and black tea, it has a possibility to enhance the systematic immunity of the gamma delta T function for influenza infection. when it says T-cell, well, there you go. The center of a person's immune system, or the big part of it, is going to come from your thymus gland. Probably you don't hear much about the thymus gland, but that's definitely one of the glands that definitely decreases in efficiency as a person ages. If you go to a restaurant, why don't you order a plain tea instead of ordering, let me see, what else could you order? Anything loaded with sugar. Okay. I don't know if you found that interesting, but I thought that's so easy. Just about anybody that's listening, you could do that right now. Even if you go to the grocery store on Saturdays to get your grocery shopping for the week done, why don't you go down the tea aisle and just look at what they have, and maybe they'll have some green tea that you say to yourself, man, I'd like to have some of that action. Now, personally, what would be wrong with, for most people, I'm not saying for everyone, but for most people, you could probably doctor up the green tea to make it a bit more potent. What if you decide to add just a little bit of apple cider vinegar to it? You know, you're kind of making your health tonic. Or if you want it warm, you could call it your hot toddy. Some people might add a little bit of lemon juice to it. Does that have health-promoting benefits? Oh, my word, yes. What if you took it as an opportunity to say, what can I do with honey today? Well, maybe you could put a teaspoon in a cup of green tea, and then you get to benefit from all its health-promoting benefits. You know what the bottom line is? All these things have a long history of being safe. Have you ever heard of somebody being rushed to the emergency room because they took a teaspoon of lemon juice and they put it in a cup of green tea? No. How about raw honey? No. Well, I mean, it's always the rarest possibility that somebody could have a severe allergic reaction, but as a general rule, no, that's not the case. Okay. The phone number here at the station is 903-589-8507. Plus, if you drink a cup of green tea, you're saying, I like myself. Don't you think your immune system knows when you're trying to help it? Of course it does. You want to help your immune system work better? Maybe consider tea. That's like so easy. It's just anybody could do that. Okay. This program is Health Essentials. There is a phone line open if you want to call. If nobody calls, I'll go on to the next topic, which is another one that I find interesting also. I don't think that we can have too much information on this. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Thanks for calling.
We have, my wife and I have some questions. Can I just throw them at you? And if
sure.
you have time, you can talk to them.
Well, as long as it's simple and straightforward, sure.
I think it will be. We, bread and grains and flour. You know, the old folks used to eat bread all the time. It's all through the Bible, making bread.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, nowadays, we hear, oh, don't eat grains, don't eat bread. Can you help us navigate that conundrum, I guess? It's just,
sure.
What do you do? Do you eat bread or not?
Okay.
You know,
this may not be the best way to tackle it, but we got to have a starting point. Do you know what
sure.
There's a chemical that's sprayed on wheat crops called Roundup. You ever heard of that before?
Yes, absolutely.
Do you know how many times they spray it over the course of starting to plant the seed until they harvest it?
Have no idea.
Five times.
Sure they do it.
Five times. So it's exposed to Roundup or glyphosate five times. Do you know basically what that is? It's Agent Orange.
Okay, yes.
Have you ever heard of commercials on television talking about if you served in Vietnam and you've been exposed to Agent Orange and now you've got lymphoma, leukemia, lung cancer, liver cancer, kidney cancer, brain cancer, contact this number for this law firm.
Of course.
Okay.
We hear that all the time.
So if you get conventionally grown wheat, you just got to assume going into it, the stuff is full of Roundup and it's very toxic. Point number two. Have you ever heard of the term genetic modification or hybridizing?
Yes, the GMOs.
Yeah, and so that's what modern wheat is. It's been genetically modified for the purpose of making it very easy for them to grow it and harvest it, but it may be a different animal than what you're referring to. When Abraham was standing in front of his tent and he saw the three visitors approaching from a distance, he asked his wife Sarah, or requested that she make some wheat bread.
Yeah.
Or I'm assuming take some fine flour, that's probably wheat. But that is a whole different thing than what we have access now. How many times is would you say the word the bread of life? And it's just all throughout the Old Testament and the New Testament, isn't it?
It is.
I know that's a spiritual analogy, but wouldn't you say that the words of Jesus, that's the bread of life, and we feast on that, and we that's the one way that you can fill your spirit with good spiritual food?
Yes.
Okay. So when you start hybridizing, you start having all sorts of side effects. And so the book that I'm going to refer to is written by Jeffrey, well, his last name escapes me, but the title of the book is called Genetic Roulette. And it's very fascinating. But if you were to read that, he talks about study after study where they tested these genetically modified hybridized grains in other countries, and all the terrible health fallout from women becoming sterile, unable to be fertile, cancers, all these health problems only occurred once they were exposed to genetically modified grains. So that's one of them. That's another point. And what I'm going to suggest to make it sound more simplistic is, if you're consuming modern genetically modified wheat, you're asking to generate inflammation. It creates a product called zonulin, and that literally beats the lining of your gut to pieces, where a person's going to probably develop what's called a leaky gut or hyperpermeable gut. This is one of the reasons why sometimes people will switch to more of a carnivore-style diet. Let's just say they eat red meat or chicken or fish or eggs or turkey or seafood, and all of a sudden all their physical maladies begin to clear up, because what they're doing is they're fasting from eating grains. So okay. There's a lot written on this topic. As a matter of fact, you could probably go to YouTube as soon as you get off the phone with me, and you could type in "are grains bad" and see what you come up with. So is that enough of an answer to that question?
Almost. Where do we? What kind of bread do we eat then?
Well, one thing that you would consider would be, have you ever heard of a type of a wheat called einkorn?
No, I can't say that I have.
Well, you might just type in einkorn and see where that. But that would be an old school, non-genetically modified, non-hybridized grain. That's probably closer to the type of wheat that Abraham and Sarah made for the Lord when he came for a visit.
Can you spell it?
I don't have my computer here in front of me. Just phonically spell einkorn.
E-I-N?
Yeah, well, just type it in. It may be with an I also. I can't remember.
Okay.
Einkorn. Yeah, I'm so smart. I can type it in the computer, and after it says you misspelled it, I'll go, okay, spell check. But if you'll look that up, you're looking at what's called organic.
Okay.
Organic is it's going to be more of an heirloom or heritage or organic form of it. That's one. If your body tolerates wheat, that's what you go with right there, the organic one. Because it never plays out when people eat, you know, regular doused in Roundup wheat.
Right. I have purchased Ezekiel bread.
Well, that would be one of them, and that's what you're looking for. Looking for, and you beat me to the punch. Thank you for saying that. You're looking for what's called sourdough.
Okay.
So sourdough is really the only thing you want to eat.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. And I have another question if you have time.
Sure.
Kind of change the subject. Is fish oil the same as cod liver oil?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Cod being a fish. But okay. All you got to do is look. So that just tells you the source of it. So if it says from cod liver oil, you know it comes from the codfish.
Okay, great. And one more question, if you have time. This is kind of out of left field, but we have cholesterol issues in our family, and several people have told me, well, you should try the CBD, the good stuff out of the marijuana plant that's being sold. Do you have a thought on that?
I haven't read anything about that altering cholesterol at all. I'm sorry, I just don't have an answer.
Okay.
You know what I did read about marijuana this week?
What?
They're linking marijuana smoking to a much higher risk of having a stroke or heart disease.
Wow. Okay.
I think that came from the American Heart Association, but when I read the numbers, I mean, if you looked at that, you're going, you mean I could be at risk of having a stroke? Yeah, you could if you're smoking marijuana. Now, that was the way they looked at it. They weren't talking about liquid form or gummy bears or however people could take it, but when you smoke it, you're asking for a stroke.
Wow. Well, we wouldn't smoke anything.
Well, how about some baby back ribs? Would you smoke those?
We would.
No, I'm just joking.
Smoke those occasionally.
Or a brisket.
Oh yes, those are good now and then.
Yeah.
Not too often, but very good now and then.
It's almost like dessert, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
Don't eat too much of it too often.
No, I don't know the answer to that, but that's very easy to look up. But here's the way that I fall on that. A lot of times when cholesterol is elevated, it starts telling you that the body is getting in decline. I don't mean that in a bad way, but you have common sense. You have your reasoning and your logic. You know when a person is 80 years old, they are not the same as when they were 18 years old, correct?
Absolutely.
And so the human body, it just doesn't work as efficiently. You have to actually... I hope this doesn't disappoint people, but it's really reality. Well, maybe this should be encouraging. You do have to try harder, and you have to be more precise, and you have to work harder to maintain your health as you age compared to when you were 16. Yeah, I would like to get on the track right now and run the 800 meters in a minute and 53 seconds, but I'm not 16 anymore. I don't know that I could do. I think I could run the 800 meters right now. I'm not trying to brag, but I think I could hit it in 7 minutes and 32 seconds. That's on a good day, I meant, if it's downhill. And the wind is at my back.
Well, one last question. My wife's cholesterol is quite high, and we're trying to manage it. So,
well, can I make one point? Do you know what the word oxidation means?
Yes.
So, exactly. Yeah, you're right on track. Thank you. So, when your body is in the process of oxidizing and it's rusting, that's always the circumstances by which cholesterol goes up high.
Okay.
I think I told the story last week or the week before about a lady whose total cholesterol was like north of 300, and as she began modifying her diet and well, that's not like a total fair assessment because she was very concerned about a health condition. And so as she tried to turn these things around, we had four different readings over the course of a year of her cholesterol. And as she improved her health, it went from like, if I make up a number, I'm probably pretty close. Let's say 325 for total cholesterol. But the time a year later, it was like 178 or 180. It was perfect. Perfect. But you have to understand that was because she had made changes. She was exercising every day. That's been shown to help. She was cutting out sugar. I think one of the things that she gave credit was eating cherries every day, frozen cherries. But this is not any different than me telling a person to drink green tea or to take pomegranate. I mean, I can look up all the studies just like you can, but what I tend to think of is if cholesterol levels were not high at one point, but now they are high and there's a family history of it, we have to find out what's at play here and what's not working right. So improving your health is always the message that you want to partake of when your cholesterol is elevated. What can I do to help myself? I know this is going to be shocking, but cholesterol is made from a substance called acetate, and that's a byproduct of breaking down sugar. So if a person's going to consume high fructose corn syrup, they're asking for it. They are literally asking for their cholesterol to shoot up. So yes, I would not purchase stock today in soft water corn syrup drinks.
My wife asked about dark chocolate. Is it?
It's beneficial. It's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would never tell her not to eat dark chocolate.
Okay. She's smiling about that.
Wait a second. Does that mean she might be slightly pleased with that one recommendation?
Absolutely.
Okay, what I want you to do is turn around and look at her right now. Do you have contact with her face, her eyes?
I do.
Okay, I want her to eat liver and onions. What does her face look like now? Is she frowning or is she smiling?
She did a little bit of both.
Oh, that boy, she's revealing so much with her body language.
We do like liver and onions occasionally.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
She asked, what about chicken livers? Chicken livers. And
well, that's one option, but the highest nutrient density of all time is going to be from beef liver.
Okay. Okay, great.
Yeah, I know. I don't expect anybody to jump up and down and say, okay, drop that topic and go on to something that I can use. All right. Well, thank you very much for your phone call today.
Thank you.
You're sure welcome. Bye-bye. Okay. I really think that we have to take a step back and we have to kind of look at this logically. When cholesterol becomes elevated over a period of time, it's giving you a clue that your body is not in good repair. And that's what we have to aim for. How can we repair the body? Good morning and welcome to the program.
Yes, sir. I was calling in to see if I could get some questions answered, possibly.
Well, sure. Well, what's your first question?
Uric acid.
Can you turn the radio off in the background?
Yes, I'm working on that right now. So I'm going to leave it.
Yeah, thank you very much. Did you say uric acid?
Yes, I've been reading a lot, and it says it has a lot to do with inflammation.
Yeah.
And I think I've had a lot of it lately, so I was trying to come up with a way to maybe help get rid of some of it.
I know this is going to sound like from out of left field, but your body naturally makes uric acid to act as an antioxidant to protect you.
Okay.
But it's at when it gets to a certain level. And so, for example, if you went to the doctor and he said, let's measure the uric acid levels, that's super easy to do. And the blood test comes back. Do you actually know what your number of uric acid is?
I do not, no. So that's okay. Something I probably...
Oh, well, no, then let me get off that topic. Let's just run straight toward it. So I would say as a general rule, if somebody is consuming high fructose corn syrup, then you're asking your body to make a boatload of uric acid. And if it gets to a certain level, you are going to have very significant inflammation. What we want to do together is we want to find out what do we do to turn that around. So obviously, one suggestion would be, if you're used to eating fast food full of high fructose corn syrup and the soda waters, then you just have to come to terms with that and stop doing it.
Yeah, well, really, I really don't.
Oh, good. Well, yeah, let's scratch that off the list then.
Yeah.
Now, I know what I'm fixing to say is not going to sound right in light of what I just told you, but black tea has the highest amount of uric acid of any substance. But the direction that I really want to go with this is, if somebody has chronic inflammation, I've got to start suspecting that maybe the kidneys are not able to clear it. And so if the kidneys become sluggish, or if they become weak, or they're just not working with much efficiency, that's where uric acid starts to build up. And if it builds up enough, it can actually form crystals that form around the big toe, and that would be like gout. I wouldn't wish that on anybody.
Okay. No, I'm not having anything there. I have noticed my hands and some of my joints are starting to ache a little bit. So, and I have noticed that my kidney scores efficiency is not as they used to. You know, 10 years ago they were in the 90s.
Now, yeah. That's what you want. You want it in the 90s.
Well, yeah, but they're in the low 80s now, pushing, you know, about to go under 80. So,
well, are you taking any medication for blood pressure?
No blood pressure medication.
Okay.
I take Tadalafil, not Tadalafil, I take Finasteride. My prostate's...
Well, know, and that's still part of the urinary tract, so I don't know that I can separate the prostate from the kidneys and the bladder. It's all connected.
Okay.
Well, do you know what cherries are? Frozen cherries.
Yes. I've just heard you say something about frozen cherries.
If you go to the grocery store,
okay,
and you go to the frozen fruit section, usually it's the lowest level, hidden, where nobody can find them.
Okay.
You might get a bag of frozen cherries and start eating about 20, 25 a day. Because there's something...
Okay.
Now, this is one of those questions you could say... Explain to me, Dr. Morgan, exactly how cherries remove uric acid. I'm going to say, I don't know. But I know that they do. And so cherries, if you take them consistently, they will help get you to a better place as far as getting rid of inflammation or helping your body become a better repair.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I'm working on.
Yeah.
Are there any cleanses or anything for the kidney? Or for, I mean, I was looking on...
Yeah, there's a lot of ways to approach this, and so let me cover it from like a couple of different angles and kind of give you some ideas about what you might do. I'm going to start off with things that just literally beat the kidneys to death. That's called sugar.
Yes, that's try to stay away from
okay.
that. You know,
good. If you need something sweet, it's called fruit salad. You can mix your blueberries and strawberries and cherries and raspberries together and eat those.
Okay.
All right. Do you know what baking soda is?
Yes.
Okay. Without going to tremendous detail, I really think that baking soda is one of the greatest things that we have at our fingertips that we could actually take to help our kidneys every day.
Oh.
And so if you said, well, could I take a half of a teaspoon, stir it in a cup of water, and drink it every morning, I'd say... Now we've got a strategy or a plan to help your kidneys. So you could do that starting right now. Is you could start with some baking soda. And you know what? Call the kidney doctor and ask him what he recommends. But I would say no one that I've ever heard of has had an overdose on baking soda. Fentanyl,
okay.
Yes. Baking soda, no.
Okay.
But if you started consuming a little bit of baking soda every day, probably what you're going to tell me is you just start feeling better.
Because I've taken that when my acid reflux gets really bad. I'll drink a glass of that. So that helps a lot.
That's a great idea. That's a good use of it. I do think that as we take baking soda, it helps take a lot of the stress off the kidneys.
Okay. Yeah.
So is that a doable thing right there?
Oh, I think it's, very doable.
So. Okay, there are some herbal teas that are made from flowers that I think help aid the kidneys at repairing them. One of them is called rose hips. The other one is one of my favorites called hibiscus.
Rose hips and hibiscus?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'll go get those today.
Yeah, that's easy. I know this is like an old school thought right here, but there's an herb called Collinsonia root. Sometimes it's called stone root. And from what I can tell, I've never held the plant in my hand, but I've watched videos on YouTube of old-timey herbalists going in the woods and identifying it and digging it up, and to me it looks pretty cool. But it's called Collinsonia root. And I think you've got something there that could potentially help many systems in the body. I think it helps improve the strength of the liver as well as the kidneys. I like it also when somebody has the lining of their gut or their gut lining is brittle and weak and not strong, or if they've got skin problems. Which technically, if somebody comes in to see me and they say my fingers are stiff and they're hurting, I mean, that's one of the very first systems that I've got to consider, is the kidneys are communicating that everything is not right. Another way of saying this is, if a person says, oh my goodness, I wake up so stiff in the morning, well, that's the kidneys right there. Or another way of saying it is, if I sit down too long at the computer on Facebook.com and I get up, I'm stiff and I hurt. Personally, I think they're allergic to Facebook.
Yeah.
Okay, so those are some ideas right there. What else do you have in mind, or do you want me to keep going?
Well, I was thinking a prostrate. I've read a lot on sal palmetto.
Yeah, that's great consideration.
Okay. Is there so many out there? Is there one better than the next that you know of? Or
well, you're kind of on your own on that deal, because it's not like I have an independent consumer laboratory where I can test every formula to actually find out if it has the active ingredients at work. And that's a real serious problem that we have right now. If you go into the grocery store and you buy a bottle of sal palmetto, my guess would be it probably has about 12 to 17% of what it says on the label. Now, I know that doesn't sound right, and you're probably thinking, well, how could that be? Well, it's the way it's always been. People tend to water things down when it comes to making money. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah.
It's a shame we have to deal with that, but that's just the reality of it. And I remember years ago, this has nothing to do with sal palmetto, but they looked at an herb called St. John's wort.
I remember that, yeah.
And they just asked the question, is there really 1,000 milligrams of St. John's wort in here? And usually what they discovered was they averaged about 17%. Well, I don't know what your definition of negligence or dishonesty or... You know, don't manufacturers have a responsibility to test the product to make sure it contains what they're selling? But not every company does that. What now?
Then they would have ethics.
Wait a second. What does that word ethics mean that you just... I haven't heard that word before. Is that... What does that refer to? No. I want to know more about that term. Wait, are you talking about politicians now?
Well, I read, I'm going to stay out of politics, but I read something when I was looking at this sal palmetto, and I was trying to look for, like, all natural.
Yeah.
And if it says all natural, all it has to do is have 10%. Me, all natural would be 100%, but it has to say 100% all natural.
Oh, I think I'm starting to understand what the definition of the word ethics is.
Yeah. So
full disclosure, honesty, integrity, truthfulness. Isn't that something that they would allow, that kind of language? How is the average person supposed to know that if it says natural, that means 10%? How does anybody know that unless you say that? Well,
I've read a lot. It's opened my eyes. So I was just
another thing that I would have you just prayerfully consider and think about. There's an element in nature called selenium.
Okay.
I think selenium is very interesting. And wait a second. Let me do this right here. If I started looking up research right now, and I'm not trying to be negative, I'm just telling you factually. There is a tremendous amount of research on men that consume green tea and then their development of prostate cancer. And so they know over and over again that there's something about green tea. It's very good for the prostate. Very good. And so you could look those studies up. The other thing that I want to just run past you, obviously, you know what a honeybee is. When it's warm like today, the honeybees will be out buzzing. I think I've seen only how many pear trees. They're just exploding. You can see the redbud trees. They're popping out. Everything's popping out. It's almost like we're in the middle of spring right now. But the honeybees, yeah. They collect pollen from every type of living plant on the planet. But pollen has been shown to be very beneficial to helping the prostate to heal and repair.
Okay, so Do they have a product with that's just a
yes,
pollen?
It's called bee pollen granules.
Bee pollen granules. You sprinkle that on your salad or something?
Or if you want to just sprinkle it in your hand and pop it in your mouth, that's good too.
Well, that sounds good.
Yeah, but you could definitely sprinkle it on your salad. But the way that I want you to do it is if you'll just take your large beehive into the Olive Garden with you and set it on the table, that way you can get the freshest pollen of all time on your salad.
We have been talking about starting some bees around here. So,
well, don't you think I'm giving a good suggestion just to carry your beehive into the restaurant with you? I mean, what could go wrong?
I could see some lawsuits with that. So,
no, I think you're overthinking it. Yeah, but if you had fresh bee pollen, I mean, that's just the honeybee is like the most amazing bug on the planet. It's incredible.
And the honey lasts, I think I heard you say one time, the honey never goes bad. They found it in Egyptian tombs.
Obviously the Egyptian tomb would be a very low humidity environment, correct?
Yes.
And that probably plays a role as opposed to the most sweltering humid heat of all time like here. But they have literally unsealed the jar and they have tasted the honey, and after 3,000 plus years, it still has an incredible flavor and taste. It's still viable. Can I give you just a little side point here?
Yes.
You know, one of the things that is a predictor of how healthy a human being is going to be the types of beneficial bacteria that live inside of our gut. If you want to call that your gut flora, your microbiome, the microbiota, it goes by a bunch of different names, but it means if you have enough good beneficial bacteria and you have a good diet, man, you're probably going to have radiant health. But every single bacteria that we need, it's found in raw honey. That is just amazing. I consume a little bit of raw honey every day.
So I can replace raw honey. I've been trying to drink Bulgarian buttermilk because I heard that was really good for your stomach.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's a great plan. I love the idea of you doing these things to help yourself. But raw honey, man, it might be a superfood.
Yes.
Now, why did King Tut not open his jar of honey?
He was saving it for the afterlife. I don't know.
Oh, good answer. Okay, well, he just hadn't gotten around to it yet.
Okay.
All right, well, I hope that helps you.
Great. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
You said that was Colin Sunny Root?
Let me spell it here. It's like the word Colin or the name Colin, and then Sonia, like Sonia.
Oh, okay. All right.
Colin Sonia.
Sonia.
Yeah, Sonia.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Morgan.
You betcha. Have a good day, buddy. Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Already there is a phone line open. And by the way, thanks for calling, sir. That was very nice of you. And obviously, you know that I was just joking about carrying a live beehive into the Olive Garden. Okay, I had another thought, but I'm going to drop it. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. How are you today?
Oh, I'm good. How are you, ma'am?
I'm blessed because I woke up this morning.
You know what? It's good to count your blessings and give thanks, isn't it?
Amen. Amen. So actually, I'm calling from the hospital. I was admitted with lower abdominal pain. They did a CT scan and diagnosed diverticulitis with some openings in part of my intestine that's making an abscess.
Oh, bless your heart. I'm so sorry.
I've come to see you before. I also have stage 4 breast and bone cancer. But the immediate problem is that all the pain meds and drugs they're giving me in the hospitals causing constipation. I'm on a clear liquid diet for like 3 days now, but they may keep me here a week or so. So on a clear liquid diet with the pain meds and the cancer meds, which those all cause constipation, I would like to, in a natural way, deal with the constipation without more drugs. If you have some suggestions, and then once I get home, if you have some suggestions for diverticulitis, I've eaten for many years a plant-based diet. The cancer drugs, I think, have done the damage in my gut that I'm dealing with now.
Yeah, I'm so sorry.
Oh,
okay.
Thank you.
Does that mean you stay away from meat?
Yes.
Okay. Let me just give you 3 or 4 ideas, and you tell me which ones you want to take away and try to put to use. Okay. There is a substance called fat-soluble chlorophyll.
Okay.
I'm not going to tell you which way to take it, but if that is placed very, very close to where the diverticuli is or the infection, that's where it seems to have the greatest amount of help. One of the old books that dealt with dealing with the infected wounds of soldiers from World War I, which I realize that was over 100 years ago, one of the most effective remedies of all time to resolve infected wounds that would not heal, maybe you could say this is called the Battlefield Trench Warfare Wound Care Center. They just use chlorophyll.
Okay.
So fat-soluble chlorophyll, to me, is a genius recommendation. Not because I said it, just because it works.
Okay. Well, I've been using for many, many months just real strong concentrated chlorophyll in my water.
That's not what I'm talking about. That's why I said fat. That's why I said fat-soluble. That's the only version that works.
Okay. So is that in a gel cap?
Mm-hmm. It is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you have to find a way to place it next to the... Anyway. All right. Number two. There are two parts to the immune system. One is called cellular immunity. Obviously, I don't have your lab work in front of me where I can look at the numbers. But cellular immunity is going to be based on how efficient your white blood cells are at going after things that don't belong, like surrounding a bacteria.
Uh-huh.
I really enjoy watching those YouTube videos where they put a germ in contact with a person's blood, and then you see the white blood cells rush to the germ and beat it up and eat it and kill it. It's just so fascinating. But that's called cellular immunity. That's based on the number of cells that you have. And so the other part of the immune system is called humoral immunity. That means how your body produces antibodies. And the only way that you can make antibodies is if you supply the body with adequate amounts of protein.
Okay.
And you cannot do that on a plant-based diet. It's impossible.
Okay.
So I'm not trying to dwell on that, but you've got to get some protein. Would you be willing to eat eggs? Because that every egg that a human being eats contains possibly as much as 150 milligrams or what are called immunoglobulins.
Yes, I do eat some eggs, organic eggs.
Well, eight a day would probably get you closer to what you need.
Oh, 8 eggs a day, wow.
Well, I think, I know, yeah, I probably should double that amount, but I'm trying to make it easy for you. If I drive by the plasma center today, I could literally watch 3 million people go in so they can sell their plasma. Now, personally, I ain't doing that. I don't want to give away my rich immune system. No way. But
yeah.
But if those, well, and I'm not trying to be critical. That's not what I'm here for. I need my living immune system. I need my own antibodies to keep myself healthy. I don't want to sell what I got. But to make a long story short, some of that plasma they're going to use to make gamma globulin shots. So when somebody's immune system is so run down that it can't rise to the occasion, they might give you a gamma globulin injection to give you a chance just for your immune system to do its job. So if you could find a way to start eating about 8 eggs a day, you could actually have a chance to actually respond to this. If you don't have enough protein, your body says, well, what do you expect us to do? We can't do anything here.
Okay.
So that's just an idea. Just think about it.
So how about like wild-caught fish? Or
absolutely, yes. That sounds good. And in addition to the 8 eggs, just have a couple of fish fillets a day too.
Okay. Okay.
So.
Alrighty. And as far as trying to deal with the constipation because of all the drugs.
Yeah, I can give you several different things that you can try experimentally. One of them is just playing with magnesium. And so here's how the experiment goes. You can say the label says I should only take 3 capsules a day. Well, you might take 3 capsules with food, and the next time you drink some liquid food they're giving you, take 3 more capsules, and the next time take 3 more. But we're trying to find that Goldilocks just right saturation where your bowels can actually start to move. The other thing that might be good for you, do you know what beetroot is? You've seen beets before.
Yes, I know beetroot. Yes.
Do you have any beetroot powder in crystal form that you could just stir into water and drink it down?
Not right this minute, but I can order Amazon.
Do you have any friends that can bring their juicer to the hospital and just start running beets through it beside your bed?
I have a Vitamix juicer.
Well, I would say beets might be one of the very best things that you can do because they tend to be naturally great sources of what are called nitrates. And nitrates...
One question.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
The magnesium, are you familiar with that brand called Calm, the kind of granulated?
Could try that one easily if you already have that. Let's just go with what you got. So take a full dose, and 2 hours later, take another dose. And then 2 hours of that, take another dose.
Okay, and how about the granulated vitamin C?
Absolutely, and that's a great idea. I like that idea. You can keep titering up on the vitamin C or increasing the dose until you have a good, generous, watery bowel movement.
Okay.
So that's all a good idea.
Okay.
And if you want to drink 2 to 3 tablespoons of extra virgin olive oil in your beet juice, you could do that too.
2 to 3 tablespoons?
Yeah.
Okay.
You're trying to lube up the bowels where it can come out.
Yeah.
And that's what I don't want for you. I don't want you to have a dried out, hardened bowel movement or poop where it can't, does more damage. So we need to really lube you up.
Okay.
I don't mean that in a bad way.
Yes.
But you don't want to have a dry, I mean, what you want is you want to have a, one of the greatest barriers that protects your entire body is this layer of mucus in your gut. And so we want to promote that. So you've got the vegetable and the other part down pat. We just might need to work a little bit extra protein so your immune system can actually start generating antibodies to heal and repair with.
Okay. Great.
So those are ideas.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, you betcha.
Okay. I appreciate it so much.
You're so welcome. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
You have a blessed day. Bye-bye.
I know this next statement may not make logical sense, but man, the number of people that I've heard make the comment that daily consumption of apple cider vinegar and raw honey, it doesn't have to be a lot. Sometimes you might need more given your circumstances. But, you know, that's kind of the way it is. I mean, if you're not really outdoors, if you don't move, you may not need like a whole lot of water. But if you're out walking barefooted in pastures where there's vetch and there's grass and vegetation, I'm guessing crocodiles. But if you're walking barefoot through the pasture and you're actually working outside all day long, you might need some more water. And who knows, there might be a delicious lake right next to you, but I'm going to recommend you do not drink the lake water. It's probably full of all sorts of stuff that would wreck your body. You know I'm just joking. Okay, so I've seen many people, just a little bit of raw honey every day work wonders. I mean, I don't want to be guilty of like trying to overpromise, and I think most people know me well enough. I am not trying to overpromise anything to you. I'm not trying to exaggerate, but you know, this is the bottom line. We gotta play the hand that we're dealt, but we've got to find literally the most positive way to move you forward to where you feel good again. We're trying to get the body to heal. And so what we want is, let me go backwards just for a brief second here, okay? I read a study years ago, and this is one of those studies that when you come across, it just makes you think. You start pondering. You start asking questions. You don't know what my habit is, but if you came to the radio station right now, I mean, literally, I'm just scribbling thoughts and notes down on these articles that I'm reading because I think it kind of helps me process and work through it. And, you know, some people, just like, you know, there's some people that when they go to church, they take notes. Or if somebody flips open their Bible, you might see, wow, they highlight that and they wrote beside it like, this is important, or this is what this means, or this is like a good thought, or, you know, thank you for grace, something like that. But I think the more that you put your pen to a sheet of paper, I think it helps you process information. That's one of the reasons why when people live a long time, usually they write every day. Preserving their brain function. I should have qualified that. Anyway, back to the study. This study, in the time that we have, I can't flesh the whole thing out, but I'm going to make it sound simple. So you tell me, what is the difference between a person that dies of old age at the age of 62 and, I'm going to say 65 because I'm going to try to make round numbers here. So what's the difference between a person that dies of old age or natural causes when they're 65 years of age and the person that passes away gently in the night when they're 95? Okay. Well, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, well, that's 30 years. There's a difference of 30 years. But let's just say that the 95-year-old person was able to cognitively think and take care of themselves. They could pay their own bills. They could manage their checkbook. They could read and study. They could drive themselves to church on Sunday. They could take care of, I should say, great-grandkids, or maybe I should say great-great-grandchildren at that point. But they could mow their own yard, and they can go to the grocery store, and they can go shopping, and they can take care of whatever they need to, and they can take trips to the jetties on Galveston where there's hard granite and there's large fish waiting for me right there. Oh, I'm sorry. I went into a daydream for a second. So when you have a person that lives exactly 30 years longer before they pass away, here's the punchline that I want you to walk away with. They've discovered that if you live 30 years longer, that's because your immune system is working about 10% better. And we can reword this any way you want. If you want to not die at 65, if you want to live to be 95, so you can glorify God and you can be productive, well, you're going to need an immune system that works an average of 10% better. Well, how do you do that? Well, actually, let's go backwards for a second. The reason that I like thinking about that study is because I think 10% is achievable. Now, if they came up with a study and said, oh, these are rare genetic hybrid human beings that are anomalies, their immune system just has superpowers or superhuman, well, that doesn't excite me a whole lot. I want to know, is something that I can do to help myself? And that's probably the message. You can do something to help yourself. So if you live to be 95, it's because your immune system is working 10% better than somebody that dies when they're 65. So that's why we're both together. We're learning what can we do. I kind of mentioned green tea. There's probably a bunch of other studies I was prepared for, but we didn't go into any of them besides what we talked about. But I sure hope that I've been a blessing to you. But one more thing. I know I'm adding on here. The requirements for the human body for protein go up as you age. If you do not supply enough protein, and I'm talking about animal sources, there's nothing left in the immune system to respond and generate antibody production. That just never plays out well. I hope you find this information encouraging. My name is Roy Morgan, Dr. Morgan. Glad to be with you. Lord willing, I'll be back this time next week on Health Essentials.